Rope Con Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, Mr. Richard Roper, it's a Thursday. He's in the studio. It's sunny outside, at least for the moment.
And it took an e-scooter over here, which
I tried, but spectacular.
It died
at a certain limit. You know, you can't get to the border. It's better than Trump's wall at keeping you out, man. There's nothing you can do.
At least it died.
Yes, not you. I didn't die. Yeah. I did realize. Well, I found one with the seat. I sent you guys a photo. Uh-huh. They had a seat.
Yeah, the so,
like,
seated ones.
At first,
I thought,
is this like one of those things like you see at the casinos for the old folks to get around? Like, you know, I don't want to be that guy. You know, with the little beeping and the basket and everything.
Hey,
and
that's my slot. Get actually, away from my slot.
Yeah, exactly. Oxygen tank holder on the right. You know, but it wasn't. It's just a little more high powered. Near West Side.
Don't you love in a casino where you see somebody with that with the nasal oxygen going and they're smoking a cigarette at the same time?
There's a there's a certain chain. Well, it's Caesars. I don't know why they wouldn't mind me to say it, but some of their casinos, they actually have double wide wheelchairs and scooters. Not for two people.
No.
For the one person.
Yeah. Two cheeks.
For,
Literally, to a plus size.
Accommodate a plus size person.
Yeah, which is brilliant.
People are not small in Vegas. It's not like it looks like in the movies. People are not wearing tuxedos.
Even the local casinos, they run those ads, like, you know, the ones that are in the suburbs of Chicago or downstate. And I'm like, I never saw Daniel Craig with Penelope Cruz, but they're in the ad, basically. You know, well, the guy with the tuxedo and the bow tie's undone.
Vince Van Patten, right?
Yeah.
Who's your buddy?
Yeah, that's right.
He's in all those commercials. Yeah.
Wearing the bow tie and the tux.
Bow tie untied,
that's
right?
Vince, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of just dangling there, and he's like doing his thing. You're like, oh, he looks really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't dress up for the casinos in the Midwest at all.
Well, he got dressed up to shoot that commercial in a casino, and that was the last time. You know,
anyone's seen that.
And last time that anybody's been in a tux.
Yeah, and, you know, Vince dated Farrah Fawcett when he was 22, so try to keep up with him,
you know? Yeah, I know. He's something. He was a tennis pro, wasn't he?
Yeah, tennis pro. We're going to have him actually visit. I've got him coming in a couple of months to say hi to you guys.
We love him.
Actually.
He's a really good guy. Hey, all right, we're going to do some movies here, but we should also mention Jacob Dylan is going to be here tomorrow on this very radio program. Jacob Dylan is going to be here in the 3 o'clock hour, and then he will be back in the 6 o'clock hour for Live Music Friday.
Not bad.
Is a pretty amazing thing. Jacob Dylan, of course, from the Wallflowers, one of the most successful and artistically one of the best bands of the last 20 years. And it is also, I would say, 30 years, really, because in the 19, they started in the 90s. And, of course, the scion, the child, the son of Bob Dylan.
Yeah. Right.
That can't be an easy act to follow.
No, but he's followed somehow. Yep. That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, what do we got going here?
Well, let's talk first. The biggest movie maybe of the summer so far, certainly of this weekend. Toy Story 4 is coming out, guys, and this is interesting to me too because, you know, I went back and you think about it. That was the first feature length Pixar film, 1995. Can you believe that?
Mm.
The first Toy Story was 1995. So that's. Do the math. I think that's 24-ish years ago, which means if you were 7 when that movie came out, you might have a 4 or 5-year-old of your own now. That's how generational this is, right? And then Toy Story 3, that was 2010, and they thought that was it because it was one of the best threequels ever. It looked like, you know, perfect closure. Andy, who owned the toys, who was the kid, remember, he was going off to college, and the toys were kind of sad, but then they were going to be given to somebody else, to Bonnie, the little girl Bonnie. But now Toy Story 4 picks up, and the toys look great. They haven't aged a bit. Woody and Buzz Lightyear, you know, it's the best gig. You know, when you look at with Tom Hanks, who still looks great, but, like, you know, he could just, all you got to do is show up in your cargo shorts and your T-shirt. Tom Hanks and Tim Allen and Joan Cusack and everybody else that voices the characters, they're all back. So Toy Story 4, the setup here is the toys are all with Bonnie, but she goes off to her first day of preschool. And she creates her own toy and calls it Forky. She takes a spork, like one of those utensils, attaches some popsicle sticks to it and puts some little googly eyes on it. And it comes to life as Forky, the new toy. But then Forky gets lost and all the toys have to go searching for him, including Woody, because that's his main mission now, because that's Bonnie's favorite new toy. So they go on the road, which is clever, which gets us a chance to go to carnivals and bring other kids into the story. And we got a clip here. Do we have a clip from, do we have Duke Kaboom? Let me set this up very fast. There's also a toy. My favorite toy, new toy, is a 1970s, 80s action figure, like a motorcycle daredevil guy, kind of like an Evel Knievel. So it's the guy on the motorcycle. Remember, you'd get that, and you wind it up, and then it would go like 2 inches and then fall over.
Right, and the whole idea was he'd go over the handlebars.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Just like Evel Knievel.
Yes, yeah. And that was so. It was really every time there was a spinal cord injury in your house. We were practicing that in the 1970s.
With the toys, yeah. So the basis here is he's a French action figure who was abandoned by his kid on Christmas morning because the kid took him out of the box, and then he found out the toy couldn't do all the things you could do in the TV commercial and threw him out. So Duke Kaboom is like, no toy could do what's in the commercial. So this is Keanu as Duke Kaboom joining the rest of the gang.
Hi, Duke.
Who's the cowboy?
Duke, meet Woody. Woody, meet...
Duke Kaboom. Canada's greatest stuntman. Oh, yeah. Huh. Huh. Yes.
Huh? Yeah. He's posing. Huh. Duke, we need
Hold
to...
Hold on. One more. Oh, yeah. What brings you back, Pete?
Really, you can tell it's him, that's for sure, right? Yeah. And they kind of make him look like him, the guy on the motorcycle. So he's terrific. This is a terrific film, like all the Toy Stories. Two was the weakest, which means it was only 3.5 stars, I think. And this one is, again, 4 stars, again, for this. And I love the introduction of the new characters. As always, there's some heartfelt lessons. There's a real tear-inducing moment here. I don't want to give it away. And people have started writing me saying, which toy dies? Nobody dies. It's not an Avengers movie, okay?
But it's somehow they do. They rip at your heartstrings.
They really do.
Them, Lauren and I were talking earlier, how you cry at just about all of them.
You really
there's
do.
Some life lessons in
and
there.
There's a little bit more, you know, on the first one, most of them actually, you almost never even see the humans. You just see their feet or whatever. There's a little bit more of the humans here, and there's a story involving one little human that's just Anna, you shouldn't even watch it.
No?
You shouldn't even watch it because the character involves about the exact same age as your daughter. And you're just going to be like, you know. It's sad, but nobody gets killed. Spoiler alert. Nobody, you know, they never show these toys going off to receptacle land or anything like that. Getting crushed. Although they can get hurt, you know, because like there's a scene where a cat is chasing some plushy toys. And they know if that cat catches them, they're going to be all stuffing, right? And Key and Peele play two carnival stuffed animals who have been stuck on the wall in the arcade game forever because those games are rigged, and they dream of one day being free. Oh, and they got Key and Peele voicing the guys, which is perfect.
Kind of sad in itself.
It is. But they dream of one day getting the revenge against the carny that just sits there, you know, trying to win the toys, man.
So will Lauren cry in this one?
Yes.
Because she's cried. Have you cried in the past?
She's a Pixar kid. You know?
Yeah.
Lauren's a Pixar kid. I mean, you grew up probably watching this, right?
You did.
Yeah, 89, so perfect childhood.
Yeah, you were the target age for the first one, and of course, everybody has them in their home video library. I will say this, and I caution parents of maybe 5-year-olds, I'd be careful, because there's some really creepy, crazy stuff. You know, the urban legend, which I don't think is urban legend, is they never test for drugs in the Pixar lot because there's a lot of baking going on with the creative geniuses. And there's always one or two scenes where you're like, what is happening here in this movie?
Fantasia-esque?
Yes. Well, this one features some really scary... Remember... Boomers will remember this. There was a doll called Chatty Cathy in the 50s and 60s. It was a doll that looked like a baby and talked and was really kind of creepy.
Yes,
and very. And then there were ventriloquist dummies. Well, in this movie, there's a Chatty Cathy. They call her like Gabby, you know, Gabby or whatever, because they couldn't call her Chatty Cathy. But she has her design set on Woody's voice box. Because she was born defective, and like when you pull the string, nothing happens. So she wants her minions to rip out his voice box, and her soldiers, her henchmen, are a bunch of ventriloquist dummies. Remember how creepy those used to be?
Like movie Magic? Still creepy to me.
So
now
she's got 4 henchmen that look like ventriloquist dummies who are trying to persuade Woody to rip out his voice box and insert it in her. So there's like an alien plot in the middle of this.
Yeah. Second only to clowns, I think, ventriloquist dummies.
So those are really creepy and scary, and I have heard reports of little ones kind of freaking out. It's pretty deep into the, and they all live in an antique store, which is kind of creepy too. Like one of those things on, you know, when you go into like in Main Street, like a resort town, and there's that one, like it says antiques, but it's really just an old lady with a goiter just trying to sell all her old crap after her husband died under mysterious circumstances.
Oh gosh.
You're really painting a picture.
Yeah.
But very the rest dark. Of it is bright and sunny and lovely and wonderful. 4 stars for Toy Story 4.
All right. You know, when you look at the cast of this, it is unbelievable.
Right.
Who is it in this? Just, you know, look it up. It's too numerous to go through. But, I mean, the late Don Rickles.
Yeah, Mr. Data an appearance had, you know, in this. Yeah, exactly. Because, of course, they have all kinds of audio of him from the other three movies.
Did they bring Lee Ermey back as the Army man or not?
No, they do not have the gunny. They have some new soldiers. Carl Weathers voices all of them. Apollo Creed. So that's kind of great.
Wow, Mel Brooks is in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's just crazy how well
Christina
done.
Hendricks from Mad Men is actually the chatty doll, and she's really creepy.
I'll bet.
Her voice work in it is effectively creepy. And then you heard Keanu, it's Duke Kaboom.
Flea is in it from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean, everybody wants to be a part of these movies. That's why you're never, you know, they keep doing them as long as they want to. Tom Hanks and Tim Allen will come back as Buzz Lightyear and Woody for sure because it's such a great gig and they love doing it.
All right. So there will be a five, you think, if you gave this one four stars?
Yeah, I do think there will be.
You know, I have a funny story really quickly. You mentioned this thing about Pixar. Disney, you know, used to have ABC had a drug test policy back in the 1990s. And they, if you wanted to work for ABC, for Cap Cities, back then when they owned it, you had to do it.
Yeah.
Disney in 1996 bought ABC. And then they instituted the drug policy at Disney, the same one, the HR policy that ABC had. So, like, when I went my first day, you know, before my first day on the job at ABC in 1989.
You had to pee in a cup?
Mentioning this year. I had to go in the cup. And it was weird because, you know, like Nurse Ratched watches you want to do it. What? And I'm a little shy here. I don't know what to do. Well, 1 year in to Disney having that drug policy, they dropped it.
Because of the creatives?
Yes. Creative artists, you could not, and essentially because of Pixar.
Yeah, 100%.
Right. Because they
firing all your best people.
Yes. You couldn't find an animator. You couldn't find a writer. You couldn't find, a depressed executive. You could. There was no way you could get through this.
Because, I mean, you know, like, who comes up with them? They're cars, but they all talk, okay? And their faces are the grills,
let's work with
okay?
That.
All right, we'll get to Being Frank, Jim Gaffigan's new movie. And Jim Gaffigan, you did a sit-down with Jim Gaffigan, and we're going to hear that coming up in just a few minutes as well. And Echo in the Canyon, this is the Jacob Dylan documentary that he's going to be here talking about tomorrow.
Yes.
So we'll talk about that coming up on the other side. But first, let's check in with Kim, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour. Jacob Dylan, of course, was with the Wallflowers for many years. One of the greatest shows I've ever seen in Tinley Park.
Wow.
Whatever the hell the name of that theater is.
It's always changing.
Yeah. They're one of my favorite bands of all times. And he has done this documentary, which Robert's about to tell us all about, that looks back at an era in music history in Southern California in the 1960s, where bands like the Beach Boys and the Byrds, specifically, they changed the sound of music, right?
Absolutely. The movie's called Echo in the Canyon, Laurel Canyon, which is in Hollywood Hills. You know, it's the great thing about it is it's paradise, but you could almost see Sunset Strip from Laurel Canyon. So all these acts started, you know, living up there in the early and mid 60s. There's one great shot in the movie, they show a map, and it's like, you know, there were still people like, oh, well, Lon Chaney lives there. But then, you know, David Crosby, Graham Nash, the Beach Boys, got a place up there, and all these other different artists, Mamas and the Papas, Michelle Phillips and John Phillips. And Graham Nash tells a story about how you'd just get a knock on your door and someone say, hey, I'm working on a song. Let me play it for you. And this is specifically about that kind of folk rock, that jingle jangle guitar that the Byrds made so famous that even the Beatles picked up on it. Actually invited the Byrds to London. George Harrison was the second person to ever get a 12-string Rickenbacker guitar after Roger McGuinn of the Byrds. And even sent him a note saying, we're basically going to take your song and have some fun with it and change it around a little bit. But the creativity there is amazing. And the cool thing. So Jacob Dylan got together a bunch of other musicians, Beck and Fiona Apple, people like that, to Jade, who's
I think she's
going to
be here with him
singer.
Tomorrow, right?
She's going to be with him. In fact, that Go Where You Want to Go, which is Mamas and Papas, they duet on that. Dedicated to the One I Love. All those great Mamas and Papas songs that were Michelle Phillips, John Phillips, Mama Cass, Denny Doherty. They did. There's an album. They actually did a tribute concert looking back at the 50th anniversary of Laurel Canyon. So the cool thing here is when you're Jacob Dylan, he's huge, obviously a great musician, also a huge fan of the music. Also, everybody will get you know, a call from him and say, sure. Ringo Starr will say, sure, I'll talk to Jacob Dylan. He might want to talk. If it's Rokan and Anna and Rich doing a documentary,
like, nah,
he might not get everybody to do it. But, you know, Jackson Brown says, come on up to the house. In fact, also has the last filmed interview with Tom Petty, which is really, bittersweet to see here.
It leads the film, actually.
It leads the film, right? Yeah. Ro had a chance to see it, and he's you know, it's great, and you realize what a great, you know, they're looking in a guitar shop, and he's like a NASCAR race driver, identifying the auto parts, except for his amps and guitars. He knows everything.
This is the thing you get about musicians. When you get to know them, they are geeks. Right?
Yes,
this
absolutely.
The thing is, they get up and they front these rock star things, and there's a whole thing in this movie about how much of the art is really the math of the art for these guys.
Yeah,
and then how they're stealing from each other, and there's a debate.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's actually a debate in the film, and it's fascinating. It's the first time you hear these guys talking about it. What's the difference between lifting and stealing?
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah. You mean in terms legally, or just in terms of your friends don't get mad at you?
Well, yeah,
artistically.
The second thing, Anna, exactly. Uh-huh. Well, you look at something like, you know, Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, Mr. Tambourine Man, which the Byrds made a huge hit of, was a Bob Dylan song. But then there's like Turn, Turn, Turn. I mean, that's all biblical verses in it, you know. So, and some of these other songs were Pete Seeger and the old time folk guys had done them, but they did them based on, you know, those things that are called, you see, traditional, because no one knows who wrote them, you know, 100 years ago. we've got a scene here where Jacob Dylan is interviewing David Crosby, who was, of course, obviously Crosby, Stills, Nash, but before that was in the Byrds, who got kicked out of the Byrds because he wanted to write a song about how he was in a threesome. And he thought, and they're like, you know, we're trying to change the world here with Turn, Turn, Turn and all these songs about, you know, the chimes of freedom. And he's like, yeah, but I was with two chicks and I wrote a song called Triad. And they're like, we're not doing that song, David. But this is Jacob Dylan just talking to Crosby about somebody else they have in common.
After they were through using the studio at night, we would go in there and rehearse. And it did the Byrds a great deal of good because we would have to listen to it back. If you hear how awful you are, then you work harder.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's exactly what we did. And then after we started to get good with it, Dylan showed up.
You have to be more specific.
Okay. You mean there's more than one?
Yeah.
Bob showed up.
Okay.
And because he had heard we were doing Tambourine Man. He listened to us play at electric, and you could hear the gears turning, you know. He knew he wanted to do that immediately.
You know, what is interesting about this is, and you reviewed this, the Rolling Thunder review doc that is also out, documentary, about Bob Dylan's tour in 1975. Yeah. That's a Martin Scorsese film. Mm-hmm. That's on Netflix. These two are out simultaneously. It is great back-to-back viewing because even though you get a little confused, it is, you get to see a really interesting moment in American music history.
Yes, that's
happened,
that's
right,
great.
There in a 10-year arc. It's really fascinating stuff. So tomorrow, Jacob Dylan is going to be here, and we're going to be talking to him along with Jade. They're going to do a performance for us that that we'll play in the 6 o'clock hour for Live Music Friday.
Awesome.
Live on tape Music Friday is what it's going to be, but recorded in Studio G. And then you have not given a star yet to this. You want to wait till tomorrow, or are you going to do it today?
No, let's do it today. 3.5 stars for Echo in the Canyon.
Wow.
I don't really have any complaints about it. There were just, I actually would have liked to have seen a little bit more of the original acts, as great as the cover stuff is, too. But I mean, there's only so much
expensive
you can put
that
in
is.
There. Well, that's true. And I do say, I love all the old TV clips with Dick Clark on Bandstand.
Great.
When he says to like Brian Wilson, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us who everybody else in the band is? You know, I mean, cause they were, you know, or he said, Neil Young at one point. He goes, now who are you? And he goes, well, I'm Neil Young from Canada. And this was my friend David Crosby, because they were all just up and comers at the time.
Yeah,
you know?
Crazy.
So a lot of great old. Oh. And then a super cool moment, Michelle Phillips of the Mamas and the Papas watching Jacob Dylan and Jade do one of their songs. And she was just like, I can't believe how cool this is.
Yes. Yeah, it's excellent. This is a really excellent film. All right, Kim Gordon's got the WGN News. And then we will hear about Being Frank, Jim Gaffigan's new movie.
Yes.
Chicago metropolitan area, Northwest Indiana's very own Jim Gaffigan. Will be talking to us about this. And you'll get the review, and then you'll hear from Jim Gaffigan as well.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about Being Frank, Jim Gaffigan, very quickly, and then we'll play your interview with him.
I'm giving 3 stars to Being Frank. Jim Gaffigan is perfectly cast. It's set in the 1990s. He plays a regular everyman dad with a wife and a gun from Breaking Bad, and 2 kids, teenage son and 1 girl, about 10 or 11. Perfectly normal life, except for as his 17-year-old son discovers quite by chance one day, turns out he also has another family.
Oh.
In another town, about 2 hours away, a wife and 2 kids. And you think that's ridiculous. Remember, there was a correspondent by the name of Charles Kuralt, who was on CBS and went on the road. And when he died, people found out there were 2 families. That's why he was on the road. So it really happens in real life. And Gaffigan is perfectly cast because the guy's a terrible human being. He's married to 2 different women. He's got 2 different sets of kids. He keeps it from them for 17 or 18 years before the secret's in danger of coming out. But we still kind of like him because it's Jim Gaffigan. And his logic for why he has the 2 families almost makes sense.
What?
So it's dark and weird, but he's a really good actor. Jim Gaffigan has played on Broadway. He was in the Chappaquiddick movie. He can do drama. 3 stars for Being Frank. And we had a chance to talk to him just a week or so ago about the movie and much more.